From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. President George Bush tries to calm America's fears about the economy. Candidates Barack Obama and John McCain spar over the Iraq War. Our political contributors are here to parse things out. With us, Mary Frances Berry. She's a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania and the former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. Also with us, Robert Trainum. He's the D.C. bureau chief for the Comcast cable network CN8. Hi, folks.
Hello, Farai.
So let's talk about money. With the president. He gave a press conference addressing the economic issues in this country, talked about the energy crisis, his plans or hopes for offshore drilling. He lifted an executive order on offshore drilling, asked Congress to lift a ban. But he also said the financial system was, quote, basically sound, that despite all the economic news like the government takeover of IndyMac and the rescue attempts on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So Bush said he's optimistic about the economy.
Despite the challenges we face, our economy has demonstrated remarkable resilience. While the unemployment rate has risen, it remains at 5.5%, which is still low by historical standards. And the economy continued to grow in the first quarter of this year. The growth is slower than we would have liked, but it was growth nonetheless.
Mary, to be quite honest, are people listening to the president at this point when their wallets are telling them something different?
They may be listening to him, but they don't believe him. And they're right not to. Whenever the president has to tell you that the economy is good and that he is optimistic and you should be optimistic, there's something wrong. It's like Nixon saying, I'm not a crook. So the fact that he has to tell us all that, and I actually don't think that anyone, the president, the Congress, in dealing with the Fannie Mae crisis and the rest of it, no one knows precisely what to do. Bernanke, they don't actually know exactly what to do, how to fit all these pieces together. We're in uncharted waters. We haven't been in for a long time in this country, and not before, because many of the mechanisms that are in place now weren't in place when we had the Great Depression. I mentioned that word in the 30s. So I think that people should hold on to their wallets, hold on to their hats, and see how we're going to come out of this. And so I don't think Mr. Bush giving us these reassuring words will do that much good.
Robert, let me jump in with a little bit more from Capitol Hill this time, the Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke.
The effects of the housing contraction and of the financial headwinds on spending and economic activity have been compounded by rapid increases in the prices of energy and other commodities, which have sapped household purchasing power even as they have boosted inflation. Against this backdrop, economic activity has advanced at a sluggish pace during the first half of this year, while inflation has remained elevated. The economy continues to face numerous difficulties, including ongoing strains in financial markets, declining house prices, a softening labor market, and rising prices of oil, food, and some other commodities.
Robert, you hear the words sluggish and all sorts of other indicators in his speech that say, well, yeah, things aren't going great. So first of all, what are we supposed to make out of all of these statements? And remind us again what the Federal Reserve Chair really has to do in these situations.
Well, you know, Farai, it's pretty interesting. There's really two audiences out there. There is the American people, which the president's trying to speak to, which he tried to do yesterday. And there's Wall Street, which is Bernanke's audience. And Bernanke basically said, look, we are moving at a very, quote unquote, sluggish pace. Notice he didn't say the word recession. Notice he didn't say the word depression. He certainly would never, ever say something like that unless we are technically in a recession or a depression. But the answer to your question specifically, Farai, this is a very complicated beast. If anyone knew how to fix the economic engine, so to speak, it would have been done already. The economy is so complex, the American economy, that is so complex, so cumbersome. As the president said, if he did have a magic wand or if someone had a magic wand, they would have fixed it already. So the real issue, and I go back to Mary's point here, is that the American people out there do not trust this president, unfortunately, because he has a credibility gap. But if you listen to what he's saying, unemployment rate is still relatively low. The economy is moving, albeit very slowly. The American people are just simply not buying it simply because of the previous transgressions of this administration.
Now, you've got all of this news, you know, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, you know, bank collapse, run on a bank. I mean, that sounds... You were talking about the Great Depression, and so the economists have not even wanted to use the word recession. Do you think that there's a chance that we could go into a depression, Mary?
Well, there's always a chance, simply because nobody understands what's going on now. And because not only is the American economy complex, we're so tied in with the global economy in ways that that are more make even more complexity. My mother called me on the phone and said, did you see all those people lined up taking money out of the bank? Reminds me of the Depression. And she started trying to tell me to go take my money out of the bank if I had any in there. And I said, no, Mom, there's the FDIC and a Federal Deposit Insurance Card. I tried to explain, you know, reassure her about all these things. But in any case, I think that no one knows really what is going to happen. In the Great Depression, eventually, we worked our way, the world did, out of it, and then there was a war. Here, it's not as bad yet, and there are some things that we may be able to manage, but others we can't. We can't do much about the price of oil in the short run. We can't do much about food prices, which is a worldwide problem with shortages and people starving in some places and competition and lined up to get food and using food to make gas. I mean, all of these complications exist, and the people who don't want to lend money are worried about people not being able to pay it back. They may be able to do something about the housing crisis internally, if they can get the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac legislation together. And perhaps that will help in the short term. But I don't think anyone has an ability to see beyond this, and anything could happen.
You know, Farai, very quickly, right after the Depression in 1930s, the American government stepped in, the presidency as well as the Congress, and said, never again. We have to put safeguards in place. For example, the FDIC, which insures individuals' money out there from $100,000 or below, the Federal Trade Commission and so forth, so to make sure that we do not have another depression. Remember, back in the 1930s, depression unemployment rate was at 25%. Mm-hmm. There were millions, and let me underscore that, millions of people that were out of work and millions more that were in breadlines. So we are nowhere near a depression. Let me just underscore that. However, this economy is moving at a sluggish pace.
Well, let's, Farai, I've got to make one other quick point. Deregulation, which we've all forgotten, in the 80s and the 90s, many of the measures that were put in place after the Depression were repealed. The prohibition on banks and how they could lend and what they could lend to, which is how they got into all these problems. All of that went out the window because we had a big reform movement in the Reagan years that we really didn't need all that regulation. And nobody needed to watch all these people. The free market would take care of it. And some of that now is coming home to hurt us.
Okay, we got to move on. We got a couple quick things to touch on. One of them is the war. Barack Obama outlined a new plan for Iraq and Afghanistan, but Senator John McCain is criticizing Obama for making this plan before he goes to Iraq, which he is planning on, and talks with military commanders there. Let's listen to a little of McCain's concerns.
Senator Obama is departing soon on a trip abroad that will include a fact-finding mission to Iraq and Afghanistan. And I note that he's speaking today about his plans for Iraq and Afghanistan before he's even left, before he has talked to General Petraeus, before he has seen the progress in Iraq, and before he has set foot in Afghanistan for the first time. In my experience, fact-finding missions usually work best the other way around. First, you assess the facts on the ground, then you present a new strategy.
Mary, on the Sunday morning talk shows, which us political geeks often watch, a lot of the senators, surrogates, and supporters were saying, well, he's not a flip-flopper on issues like, you know, religion. He just is informing himself with a changing time. So does Senator McCain have a point? Well, how can he make a statement before he's, you know, seen what's going on?
Well, McCain does have a good point. I thought that was a good comeback on the part of the McCain campaign. But I think the most interesting thing that happened on the Iraq question is the LA Times I read that Obama's website took down the language which said that the surge was not working, which had been there for months and months, has been there since the beginning, and took it down and put up some other mealy-mouthed language because the surge obviously did, quote, work, if you mean by work, that the violence is down, and if you don't think about all those refugees who fled and the people who got killed and so on. So that McCain seems to have been right about that. Also, it might have been better for Obama to wait until he went, but he had already made a misstep when early on, a week before, he made it sound like he was changing his mind and his supporters jumped all over him. So he was now trying to make a preemptive strike by saying what he plans to do before he goes. But in logical terms, it doesn't make that much sense.
Robert, I got to move on to one last thing for you. In other political news, the senator And that's John McCain spoke at the NAACP convention today. Senator Obama spoke previously. Let's take a listen to Senator McCain.
Black and Latino students are among the most likely to drop out of high school. I don't have to tell you that. African Americans are also among the least likely to go on to college. After decades of hearing the same big promises from the public education establishment and seeing the same poor results, it is surely time to shake off old ways and to demand new reforms.
He reportedly got a standing ovation at the end of his speech. Robert, do you think that the education issue is the right one to use to lever African-American support?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. Interesting enough, Farai, very quickly, John McCain got a very warm response from the NAACP today in Cincinnati. That's number one. But also number two, speaking on the issue of education, that is a major wedge issue within the African-American community, because there are some out there in the community that absolutely want school choice. There are others that do not for various reasons. And so what John McCain is trying to do is say, see, I am one of you. I want to be your education proponent. I want to be the one in the White House that's going to push for pieces of legislation that's going to give you, the parent, the opportunity to make a decision that's best for you and your child. Again, he got a standing ovation for that simply because he understands that one of the major issues in the Black community is education.
Just a smidge from you, Mary. Right issue, wrong issue. Smidge.
It's the right issue, and McCain has done himself a lot of good by showing up and by making that speech. And there's a lot of buzz in the community that, hey, maybe this guy McCain is worth taking a second look.
Okay. On that note, thank you both so much.
Thanks, Farai.
Thank you.
Mary Frances Berry is a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania and former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. And Robert Trainum is the D.C. bureau chief for the Comcast cable network CN8. Both spoke to us from our headquarters in Washington, D.C.